Hey, Bill Nye, the Science Guy here.
This is Salman Rushdie.
Hi, this is Julia Sweeney.
I'm Neil deGrasse Tyson.
This is Theo Wilson.
Hi, this is Dar Williams.
I'm Mr. Deity, and you're listening to The Humanist Hour. I command you to listen now, or I will smite you.
I am a sound scientist, came to evaluate the evidence on a closed case, highly classified, confidential, in a race against the clock.
Hello, this is Todd Stiefel.
And I'm Jess Constantine. You're listening to The Humanist Hour, the official podcast of the American Humanist Association.
Humanism is that thing we do when we're being good without a belief in deities.
Todd, you make it sound so appealing.
I'm just trying not to say good without God every time. How you doing?
Good. I'm gearing up for our conference. I'm so excited.
I know. New Orleans.
Yeah.
I'm going to eat some Cajun Creole.
What exactly is that?
It's the food of New Orleans. It's things like jambalaya and shrimp gumbo, shrimp etouffee, shrimp and grits.
I'm not actually a shrimp person, but I like some. Is it jambalaya or jambalaya?
I don't care. It's delicious.
Well, whatever it is, I'm going to have some of that. It's like sausage and rice and beans, right?
Yeah.
I always like spicy stew.
Yeah. It's...
I do too, but I've recently heard jambalaya and I'm like, am I saying it wrong? I don't really know.
I think we're out of season for boiled crawfish, but that's my favorite. Oh, spicy boiled crawfish by the pound.
Mm. Wow.
Oh, good. And there might be some drinking and partying on Bourbon Street, which I think is like two blocks from the hotel. And
yeah, it's super close.
Some blues music and good times. Oh, yeah, and there's a conference too.
right. That 3 days, lots of speakers, lots of awards. It's going to be awesome. Lots of music.
Right. Yeah, I'm sure I'll be going to the conference a lot. Yeah.
I mean, I know that's where I'll be. I might, maybe I'll see about as much as New Orleans as you'll see of the conference.
Of course, we'll actually be working on Sunday.
We're going to have, it's going to be sort of a humanist, atheist author, panel of authors. So I'm really excited about that.
Well, hopefully they're not too hungover. Although maybe it might be better if they are. Early Sunday morning, because we could toy with their minds.
Well, I'm sure that the people sitting and listening are going to be hungover too. So if as long as we're all in the sort of same general state of aware but hungover, I think it's going to be fine.
Maybe we should make it an official Bloody Mary morning.
We can do that. Aren't you supposed to cure your hangover with the thing that you drank the night before?
They say that, but Bloody Marys are good. They've got celery in them and olives, and they're filled with vitamin C and other things that are good for you. But it's going to be a good time. I love New Orleans. I haven't been there since Katrina, but I hear the French Quarter is still in great shape and should be a good time. Going to be some great people and yeah, looking forward to it.
Same here. And actually Sunday after the conference, I mean, it's part of sort of the post-conference there's two different things you can do after the conference. One is you can take a tour on the steamboat Natchez, which I think would be pretty cool. And the other is that you can sign up with it for the Humanist Volunteer Service Project. So it's the AHA, it's going to be the Harvard Values in Action, which we had Greg, the humanist chaplain at Harvard, come and talk about his project, and also Brad Pitt's Make It Right Foundation. So we're all sort of teaming up to do a service project after the conference. So you can either go on a boat and drink, or you can clean up New Orleans. You choose.
I hear Brad Pitt will be personally working with us at that event. Disclaimer,
that's
Brad
true.
Pitt will not be working with us at that event.
Yep, he will be there. Nope. Shakes her head. Nope.
Nope.
Not true.
Probably not.
you should go anyway. Anyway. So
yeah, it's going to be a great convention. I'm psyched. Listeners, be there.
Be there. If you want to see who we're giving awards to, if you want to see who's giving lectures throughout the weekend, visit conference.americanhumanist.org.
So we have a couple really cool things for the show this month.
We do, Todd. We have a couple really cool interviews, and we have one last piece from the Reason Rally. So Todd, you actually, Todd, are involved in the interviews. Tell our listeners who you got to talk to.
So yeah, me and my buddy Scott Burdick had a lot of fun. We were backstage with Bad Religion, if you will. And this was at the Reason Rally, but we got to spend time back there interviewing the guy, some of the guys from the band. And what a blast we had. We just hang out, talking and having fun. And, you know, we spent, I don't know, about half an hour with Greg Graffin, the lead singer of the band. And we spent a similar amount of time with Jay Bentley, the bass player and also a founder of the band back in 1979. And just, some, yeah, really cool guys, down to earth and just some fun conversations. And
so I'm willing to bet that a lot of our listeners know Bad Religion, but just in case you don't, they're one of the most prominent punk rock bands. As Todd mentioned, they were formed in LA in 1979. They've really inspired a lot of the sort of the punk genre. They sort of have been given credit for revitalizing it and inspiring lots of punk bands. But they're known for musically their harmonies. But they're also known for having really intelligent and political and socially charged, lyrics, which sort of, I guess it goes to show you, like, as Todd said, Jay and Todd chose to end their interview mutually when Richard Dawkins went on stage. So they walk their walk too, which I think is cool. Like they don't just, they believe in the things that they sing about.
Yeah. We have a special guest host for the month, Scott Burdick, who is an artist, and we'll post information about him. He also did a really interesting movie called In God We Trust. In his spare time, he does documentary movies, and that one focuses on the controversy with the flying of the Christian flag, the Christian cross flag in King, North Carolina, and the reaction of the community when a veteran, U.S. military veteran, protested against it, and the community became very angry and hateful and Christian nation things. And so Scott interviewed a lot of people locally about it, and we see the underbelly and the ugly side of of some of these people who desperately want to mix religion and government. So yeah, very, very cool stuff. And then we also have our very own Roy Speckhart, and we've got Roy's speech from the recent rally. And he is, of course, the executive director here at the American Humanist Association. So I have a fun toy that I got, but it's not really a toy. It is an all-knowing piece of wisdom and divinity, which is the Darth Vader's Destiny Decider. It's like
really?
A magic eight ball, but with Vader.
Really?
So, Jess, would you like to take a stab at this? Would you like
I
to?
I would.
You got to ask Vader a question.
Vader, here's my question for you. Is the Defense of Marriage Act going to be repealed?
If that is your destiny.
That doesn't help me. He said if. He just gave me a condition. That I'm asking you if that is my destiny. Let's try it again. Vader, is the Defense of Marriage Act going to be repealed sometime in my lifetime?
It is the only way.
Yes.
See?
Vader, is Obama going to get reelected?
No.
Uh-oh. That sounded very ominous.
Let's forget that I asked that one.
Do you have any others?
Vader, am I going to live a long and happy life?
The Emperor does not share your optimistic appraisal of the situation.
I don't like that one either. Vader, are you my father?
You should not have come back.
Vader, are you my father?
How is that possible?
Yeah, that's good.
That's a reasonable. That was a much more reasonable response. And so that's how fortune tellers work.
Exactly.
Oh, goodness.
That's awesome, Todd.
Good stuff. So let's see. What's in the news?
You were mentioning that in Dallas, the DFW Corps, the Dallas-Fort Worth Coalition of Reason, is experiencing some trouble with running one of their latest ad campaigns in a local theater, right?
Yeah, in Plano, Texas, the Dallas-Fort Worth Coalition of Reason, the DFW Corps, C-O-R, if you will, was trying to run a pre-film advertisement at one of the local movie theaters, and they actually had a contract signed. And after the theater received some complaints from local bigots, the theater actually revoked the contract and refused to run the ad. So the Appignani Humanist Legal Center sent a nasty gram to the theater a few weeks back. And so far, the theater has not reversed positions. So we're in the process of reviewing our options, but really kind of sad and disturbing.
Well, I mean, this is obviously a video ad of us telling people that they should not believe in God, right?
Oh, and that all religious people are evil. And
it has lots of gay people doing gay things that would offend people.
Full frontal.
Yeah.
Except it's all sweet, loving families.
That's the thing. This ad campaign is, it's really sweet. And I think it's actually a really good idea.
Yeah, it's a super family-friendly, just, you know, hey, here we are. Come hang out. Have fun. We've got a community type stuff. Yeah. And, you know, some people can't handle that.
Right. I mean, listeners, see for yourself. Go to their website, dfwcore.org. And you can see like their whole site now. It's beautiful. It's just, it's very family oriented. And all it says is our family is good. It's great without God, right? Isn't that what they say?
Great.
And they represent lots of different families, lots of different family makeups. It's great.
Yeah. It to me, and I'm no attorney, but to me, this seems like a crystal clear violation of Title II of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which specifically calls out movie theaters as a place of public accommodation where you're not allowed to discriminate. So we shall see.
They're not allowed to discriminate. Is there any government funding in this?
Oh, whether or not it's government funding, this goes back to the civil rights era pre-civil rights era rather, where movie theaters would only sell tickets to white people and wouldn't let black people go to the movies, and people had their own water fountains for different colors and the like. And so apparently this movie theater wants to go back to the days of pre-civil rights, and we'll have a movie theater for Christians and one for atheists, and you know, maybe we'll have to ride at the back of the bus too. It's disappointing. The place is called Angelica Film Center. Interesting.
That is interesting.
Yeah, it's on Bishop Road.
I mean, but you know, they're gonna, if you reference that, they're gonna say, well, these people didn't choose to be black, but you're choosing to not believe in God. Like, that's
yeah, well, the Civil Rights Act specifies you're not allowed to discriminate on the grounds of religion either. So you can't have, you know, not, you can't forbid Jews or Muslims or humanists, right, or anybody from doing these kind of things. So I guess the question, my understanding is that this is going to come down to, well, they're certainly not allowed to discriminate based on ticket sales and keeping people from seeing movies, but are they allowed to discriminate based on who they sell advertisement to? And
right,
so my guess is this is going to get either fought out in the courts or who knows, but options are being pursued, more to come on that in the future. So yep.
Did they not know what they were? I mean, they had a contract. Did they not know what they were agreeing to in the first place?
Yeah, of course. They got some complaints and
chickened out.
Yeah, and chickened out. They let the bigots do the talking for them. So yeah, maybe they'll do the right thing. But you know, if people wonder why the movement is so important, there it is right there. You know, if you're a humanist, you might not be able to run your ads in the local theater, even though the same local theater runs ads for churches and Christian groups.
Right.
So, I mean, if that's not discriminatory, I don't know what is. So we'll see what happens. If that's not illegal, it probably should be, but my libertarian streak starts throwing some questions about government regulation. I'll need to think about it further, but you know, my guess is it's already illegal. And if so, then we just need to enforce that law.
Right. It's so sad that, I think you've said this before, like, the law is already on our side. It's sad that we have to keep making it enforced.
Yep, exactly. The government does a very bad job of helping us enforce these things for us.
Right.
but it is what it is.
Right.
So let's get to it. We have a brief segment of Roy Speckhart, our executive director here at the American Humanist Association. He was one of the speakers at the Reason Rally, and he did an awesome job up there. So here we go. Here is Roy speaking on the Mon in Washington, D.C.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Isn't it ridiculous that the people who take the Bible literally, who reject evolution, and who think the voices they hear are divine revelation, then go on to be elected to public office? Isn't it absurd that we atheists who get our values from reason and experience are considered unelectable? This prejudice that many Americans have against atheists and humanists is unfair, irrational, and has to stop. It's time we come out of the closet and gain respect, and we're by no means the first to face this kind of challenge. Back in 1978, Proposition 6 was the ballot measure in California aimed at preventing gay people as serving as public teachers. Harvey Milk said the following on election night. To the people who joined us and rejected Proposition 6, we owe them something. We owe to continue the education campaign that took place. We must speak out. And most importantly, every gay person must come out. As difficult as it is, you must tell your immediate family. You must tell your relatives. You must tell your friends if they are indeed your friends. You must tell your neighbors. You must tell the people you work with. You must tell the people in the stores you shop in. And once they realize that we are indeed their children, that we are indeed everywhere, every myth, every lie, every innuendo will be destroyed once and for all. We atheists and humanists must also come out of the closet, clearly stating that we don't rely on a higher power to govern our lives. And you've taken the first step being here. This is our coming out party. Now, the American Humanist Association has represented the idea that you could be good without a God since 1941. But for much of that time, we were focused on philosophy, not activism and numbers. Still, that philosophy was groundbreaking. We were among the first to support elective abortion before NARAL, before Planned Parenthood. We were among the first to support same-sex marriage before Harvey Milk's activism, before Stonewall. We were among the first to support death with dignity before Jack Kevorkian and the Hemlock Society. Yet, our members and leaders realized it wasn't enough to be ahead of the curve. We had to speak to others besides those of ourselves. So that's why we moved our headquarters to Washington, D.C. and transformed into a public advocacy organization for the positive message of humanism, standing up for atheists and agnostics. Today, we directly represent tens of thousands of constituents. We operate a humanist legal team, a humanist teacher corps. We have arms dealing with feminism, LGBT outreach, and humanist charity. We have a lobbying effort on Capitol Hill, and we advertise in venues across the country. And we appear in newspapers and radio and TV. And we do all of that on the budget of a neighborhood church. Imagine that. So we need your support in order to expand our impact. But it's not just us that needs that support. Every group here does. Did you know that the 14% of non-theists out there represent more people than that of Muslims, Mormons, Pentecostalists, and Jews combined? We are more in number than the gay and lesbian population, more than the African-American population. We are one of the largest groups in this country, but you'd never know it from our organized numbers or political power. That changes today. Today we come out as atheists and agnostics and humanists, and we share our need for a secular America. Thank you.
That was American Humanist Association Executive Director Roy Speckhart. You can learn more about Roy and about our organization at AmericanHumanist.org.
And now for the main act, let's talk to Bad Religion. So first up, we have Greg Graffin, who is the lead singer of the band. And we got to hang out with him in his backstage trailer and talk to him. So roll tape.
Well, tell us your name and what your religious belief is, and I know it's more subtle, and what your job is.
My name is Greg Graffin. I'm the singer of the band Bad Religion. I also teach evolution at Cornell University. And there's a question on the table about what my religious beliefs are, and I don't have any. So I feel you're a typical atheist. I kind of bill myself as a naturalist because I think there's more to talk about in the world of naturalism than under the banner of what we don't believe in.
Do you consider yourself a humanist? And if not, what do you see as the difference between naturalism and humanism?
That's a good question. I consider myself a humanist in the sense that I value human endeavors. And I guess in the great tradition of humanism, that sprung out of the Enlightenment, I find myself, I feel pretty much at home when I read that literature and when I talk to other people I would consider in that community, like my co-songwriter Brett Gurwitz, like my colleagues in evolution, and my bandmates. Bad Religion has been around for 30 years now, singing about the importance of a rational society and the importance of the importance of the philosophical foundations upon which we build our society. Early on, we found a home in the punk community, and we've maintained that community and hopefully, have contributed to it over all these years. But what we're seeing here today, I think, is a community outside of the punk community. It's a secular group, a secular gathering. And I look out there and I don't see that many punk rockers at all, but I think that's really refreshing because it shows, one thing it symbolizes is that there's people from all walks of life who I think wave the banner of humanism and wave the banner of rational thinking and the importance of secular society. And we feel very much at home here.
Your lyrics are much more poignant than the average rock band's lyrics. What do you hope to change with your lyrics, and what do you hope the legacy will be with the meanings of your songs?
Well, first of all, thank you. That's a compliment.
It is.
I don't necessarily think, lyrics are, don't forget, there's a strong element of metaphor to all lyrics. And what was the adjective you gave it? You
said they're poignant.
They're poignant. So there's some emotional connection there. And I think that that's a compliment because ultimately a song is different from a scientific report. And yet we've used the metaphor of science, we've used the metaphors of the natural world to create songs. And the songs have sort of an emotional connection with our audience. And to me, that's, I guess, therein lies the humanistic component. It's the emotional connection that people on the stage have with their audience that's always been the most meaningful to me. So, yeah, I do put a lot of effort, as does my co-songwriter Brett. We put a lot of effort into our lyrics, but it's really to reach that emotional connection. And that's something that's not so easy to define scientifically, and it's not so easy to understand when we observe it objectively. But it's a great privilege to be part of that process. And I think that's motivating. It's what keeps me going in wanting to not only create that connection, but to hopefully, as a teacher, has an emotional connection to his students, to inspire them and to hopefully create a better society. And in the long run, you know, our style of punk rock was always through compassion for a better world. It wasn't about nihilism.
Well, there's not a lot of punk rockers who are scientists and science teachers either.
There are a couple.
tell us.
My friend Milo from the Descendants, he has his PhD in biology also.
Cool.
And I know that my friend Brian from The Offspring was studying a PhD in biochemistry. So there is this weird connection between biology and punk rock. I don't actually know anything about their religious beliefs.
Okay. Were you always a naturalist, or were you brought up religious, or was this something?
Well, I was never brought up in a religious household. In fact, a couple of years ago, I wrote a book called Anarchy Evolution, and in that book, I sort of outlined the two disparate elements of my life, punk rock and academic science, and the interweaving of the two through my own personal evolution. And I point out how my family never taught us, my brother and I were never taught the traditional stories of the Bible. So we never had any kind of understanding of what most kids get brought up in Christian society, at least, you know, the story of Jesus and all that stuff. And yet, my parents are they're wonderful people who are have outstanding ethics and great moral values, and that's what got passed along to us. So it was always sort of like, I always took a lot of offense when I heard people talk about this Christian society we lived in, or, you know, the other thing that bugs me a lot are when people talk about Christian values, you know, as if there's something different about their values than someone who's not Christian. It's ridiculous. The truth is, and the more I study evolution and the more I study sociobiology, the more I recognize that morality and ethics doesn't come from an institution. And it's a boring story, but it's as boring as look to your parents or look to who you were raised by, and there you will find your ethical and moral constitution. I really believe that statistically will pan out to be true.
You have lyrics that you've sung that says, I want to conquer the world and give all the idiots a brand new religion. If you had the opportunity and the power, would you conquer the world, and what would you replace their religion with?
Okay, well, so now I feel defensive.
I'm not trying to. We could skip the question.
No, it's a fine question. I just want to point out, again, our lyrics are like hopefully emulating the songs that we admire the most and the entertainment that we admire the most, be it movies or comedy routines. And that is, they have a lot of satire in them and a lot of irony.
Mm-hmm.
And so half the time when we write a song, or when I write a lyric that says something, the idea is not to interpret it literally. And that song is a parody. It's sort of a cynical view of religion and wanting to accumulate a following and disparage the flock and reduce your language to the simplest terms. And so that's kind of why those words, you know, seem kind of harsh. It really is a parody, and it's ironic. So using those elements as a poet would use them, if I may, has nothing to do with my scientific worldview or whatnot. And the second part of your question was, what if you had that power? Would you force a scientific worldview down people's throats? And of course, the answer is no. I don't think you can force anything down people's throats and have it last for very long. I think, again, coming from a position of education, being an educator is all about not excluding a portion of your audience, but including them and allowing them to have their beliefs, but showing them maybe through self-awareness, through self-analysis, through critical thinking, somehow get them to identify the fallibility of their thinking, because it's much more powerful if someone comes to learn something through self-discovery than through indoctrination.
So you're trying to teach them more to think rather than tell them what they should think.
I would say so. In fact, tonight we're going to play a song called Think Before You Die that is sort of one of the more literal interpretations of what I just said.
That's good.
Can you articulate, if possible, I'm putting you on the spot, but articulate for us your passion for evolution?
I'm passionate about evolution because I think it's a fantastic narrative. And some people hear narrative and they think, oh, it's social science, it's wishy-washy. No, I think narrative is very important. It's sort of the story, the underpinning of our worldview. And I view almost everything from an evolutionary lens. And it's helped me to make sense of the world. It's helped me to identify shortcomings and other social policies or other ways of looking at the world. And because I discovered it at a crucial age, I was in my last year of high school, and I started reading evolution, and the world started to make sense to me finally. Again, having no background in the traditional stories of religion, here I got a creation myth through evolution. Here I got a myth of connection through the story of our, through the web of life and through the interconnections that we have with other species. Here I finally had significance. I mattered in some way. All the things that probably a religious person would have learned much earlier on, these came to me very naturally. So that in itself was a process of discovery that was very personal. And I learned later when I studied the philosophy of science that these weren't just myths. These were verifiable facts. These were things we could go out and verify for ourselves. And those are the things that drew me deeper into the science, and I knew I wanted to pursue it alongside my music career.
Kind of sounds like you're talking about like Richard's new book, The Magic of Reality. I mean,
I haven't read his new book, but Richard Dawkins has always been influential in my thinking. I don't agree with him on a lot of the ways that he approaches. He's a little bit harder line than I prefer, but he still has inspired me to no end, and I'm very happy to be included in a list with him as thinkers that have contributed to this Reason Rally.
But like hearing you talk about finding evolution, a lot of the Christians that I've interviewed, the fundamentalists, you know, they just say it would be so depressing to think that evolution was true, where it sounds like for you it's a magical, wonderful thing.
Yeah, so the I've heard that too, you know, the criticism that if it was true, it'd be grim. But that's really not giving it its fair due, because the truth is I find great amount of hope and encouragement in knowing that I'm connected to this huge tradition, this organic tradition that began 3.5 billion years ago. I'm part of something that's pretty awesome, and that every other human being on the planet right now shares a portion of my DNA and thinks similarly to me, and has the capacity to do the same things that I do. To me, that's liberating. It's a wonderful feeling. It makes me feel like I can share this place with other people, and makes me feel like we have a sense of having to work together to overcome problems. And I just don't understand. It's a short-sighted kind of viewpoint that evolution is grim. You could say the same thing about, if you want to demean the narrative of the Bible, you can demean it all you want and say that too is fairly grim.
It is interesting because I was just on a Navajo reservation painting Indians for a week, and one of my friends at home had told me, well, you know, the Navajo, they are good trackers because they sense everything through their hair. If you cut their hair off, they can't track. And so I was explaining to her, well, I've gone with a lot of the trackers and on all the things that they do. And to me, it's more amazing when they tell you all the signs that they've seen. And I see that like science, you know? I mean, why is...
Of course, yeah. Well, I think it's the same... they've obviously got a tradition of paying attention to every bit of their sensation, which, you know, we can also talk about Chinese medicine that has long tradition. We can't really understand it in the West, but that doesn't mean we should demean it. It means it's a different way of approaching the world, and that... By the same token, we may never, as Westerners, be able to learn it. Mm-hmm. But to honor it and to see it actually work is awesome.
Yeah, that's great. But...
We're here at the Reason Rally, and I was wondering what you found to be the most inspiring thing for you so far today.
I think just looking out at the audience and seeing the people, again, from so many walks of life who feel liberated. You know, they feel like they've been given a chance to not have to hide who they are. It's very reminiscent of what attracted me early on, 30 years ago, to the punk scene. It was a community where people said, you know, I can be who I want, and I don't care who's against it. I've got people here I can share my true self with, and that's what I see when I look out there. A lot of people who are able to share their true humanity with each other, and that's very exciting.
It's very cool. Go ahead, Todd. Do you have any more questions?
I could ask questions all day, but I don't want to take up all his time.
That's all right. You can ask one more, and then I'll rest my voice.
You have anything
else?
Can
I ask one question?
Sure.
Go ahead.
Do you see the current backlash by the religious right as being a sign that things are moving to the right, or is it just a reaction to things becoming more secular?
It's very difficult for me to tease apart how much of it is really a reaction and how much of it is played up by the media. That's my ignorance. I'm only speaking, I probably am ignorant about it because I never saw it as much of a threat. I think that that you are likely to get a louder minority if they know they're going to get the kind of coverage and media spin that they've been getting. They've been very successful at manipulating the media. I think we need to know whether that accounts for a significant portion of American society or not. And I honestly can't gauge that right now. There's no question, though, that they're fighting a losing battle. Whether they like it or not, they're, you know, the secularization of Western society is it's everywhere. It's ubiquitous, and it's not slowing down. So you might, I would expect to hear them more vocal, and I would expect that we can't at this point get a good indication of whether it's a serious threat. I believe we'll be able to in some ways by seeing, you know, the lack of success of people like Rick Santorum and the lack of, you know, so we can say, oh, well, he got this far. Well, it's still, if he ever made headway in the sense of, you know, getting his own party's nomination, I think we'd be more worried. I just don't see it as a significant threat. Maybe I'm naive. That's possible.
Yeah, who knows? Yeah. I mean, I was kind of the same opinion in the town. My wife and I moved from Chicago to North Carolina. Mm-hmm. And that first film I made, we'll have her give you one, was kind of a wake-up call for me, In God We Trust, where the town had Christian symbols on their memorials and things, and a veteran from Afghanistan who's an atheist complained. And they had a big rally of 5,000 people who said, we'll boycott the businesses of anybody who's not Christian. We'll run out of town. So I went for a year and interviewed all of the people in the town, but also our senators and congressmen, Barry Lind in Washington, and historians. And I was surprised at the widespread belief that separation of church and state doesn't exist, should be gotten rid of, that we need to. And it just shocked me. It woke me up. I completely was your view.
I appreciate that. So if in the, no offense, I live in a town of about 500 people outside of Ithaca, New York. And Ithaca itself is very enlightened.
Right.
But all surrounding there's a small town. So I understand what you're talking about. But I also spend half my time in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. Now, if you can carry that kind of attitude to a major metropolitan area, then there's reason for worry. But these little backwaters have existed for a long time with their crazy beliefs,
right.
And it has not affected the growth of secular life. The fact that I can live in a small town like that and get by just fine, and I get along with my neighbors, and they're all theists, and they're all right-wingers, but we get along on a certain level. To me, that says society is moving towards a more secular, American society is being more tolerant of secular beliefs.
It almost seems like it's the best and worst of times, where we've got gay rights, we've got all kinds of things that we didn't have at the founding, and yet we have this fundamentalist. I mean,
there's a hardcore fundamentalism, though, in every single community. In punk rock, there's a hardcore fundamental group of people that will not accept the fact that if you play in front of more than 500 people, you've sold out. Or some crazy, you know, there's crazy notions in every community.
Well, you even had band members who left your band for that reason.
Oh, right? Yeah. We've had every criticism in the book thrown at us. But the truth is that it hasn't changed the course of the movement, if you want to call it a movement.
Right.
Likewise, the secular movement is it's going to take a lot more than a small backwater town in North Carolina to threaten the growth of secularism.
I guess.
And I'm living it firsthand proof because I do live in one of those small towns.
So as do I.
And they haven't run me out on a rail.
Well, I was friends with everybody too. I never would have guessed that until this Christian flag thing came up, and the hate came out. It was unbelievable. And since I'm my wife and I are artists, and we sell our work in museums and galleries, so we don't have to have the local economy. So I made the film.
I'm in the same boat.
But nobody else could speak. I mean,
right.
they couldn't say anything because they would be boycotted. They would have been run out.
Yeah,
that surprised
terrible.
Me.
That's
it really
terrible.
Did. Yeah. So, yeah, very good. Well, we're taking up all your time. You probably want to chat with some of the people.
I appreciate
that.
It.
Greg,
thank
you so much.
I've got a copy of that video for you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
This one goes, everybody knows what's best for you. Let's go. We're somewhere in the middle, and we're all just gonna do. There's someone watching over you. Inside they know what's best for you. Jumping on tomorrow, it's a day as now it's here. But no one is the Jesus. Look at all your peers. They're all looking down on you. Inside they know what's best for you. Everybody knows 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 what's best for you.
That was Greg Graffin, lead vocalist of the band Bad Religion. And up next, we have sort of a spontaneous interview between Todd and Jay Bentley, the bass player for Bad Religion.
This is kind of fun because it wasn't so much an interview as a conversation that just kind of started. And you know, I think a lot of times when bands get interviewed, it's almost always the lead singer who gets to do gets the interview. For example,
right.
We actually set this up in advance. And when we showed up for it, there was Greg to do the interview. And so we just caught Jay outside and ended up having a conversation. So it's kind of cool to get a different perspective from someone in the band who has been there and has been just as much a part of the band all along, but who might not get, you know, get as many interviews and get talked to as much. So especially for the Bad Religion fans out here, here's a cool opportunity to hear from Jay.
You know, one of the things I'm trying to do in my activism is I don't try to attack religion or religious people. I just want people to help. I want them to understand who we are as non-religious people and what we do believe in, but also just be a little bit skeptical. You can be religious without being a fundamentalist.
Yeah, there isn't anything wrong with faith. There isn't anything wrong with religion. It's what people do to and with religion that's the problem. Just words on paper, like, that kind of is cool. That's like heartfelt. Oh, that's nice. Oh, wait, no, you can't go beat people up because your God is bigger than their God. You can't hate on a person because that book says it's okay to hate on a person. That's not okay. You just need to get into that humanistic element of how are we all going to get along here? And that's everybody. And it's not going to work if you're just picking on a doctrine that was written however many hundreds of years ago and decide, well, that's what it says.
What's your viewpoint? What's your religion or non-religion? How do you identify? What do you believe in?
I don't know. That's a great
answer. It's a great answer.
I don't know. Maybe of all the guys in the band, I might have the most amount of faith. I just don't know what I have faith in. I don't know whether it's science or whether it's karma or whether it's just, you know, the objective nature that just kind of you get what you put out.
What does faith mean to you?
I think maybe in from an agnostic point of view, if people will say, I'm willing to believe if you show me proof. And maybe for me, faith is, I'm willing to believe without you showing me that, but I'm not willing to go to an extreme. I'm willing to say, like, okay, you know, I feel like I'm okay knowing that I'm okay. I don't know if that makes any sense. And I think that for me, having faith in your friends, your family, you know, you're like, I'm in a band, I've been in for 32 years, I have faith in those guys. And that's kind of simple stuff. And then, you know, you get into the spiritual part of things, and it's like, okay, well, okay, I can see some things and other things I can't. I think it's more of an objective idea of faith versus just like, well, there's only one true path. And that's what scares me. You either do this or you're going to hell. It's like, come on, everybody's been saying the same thing. It's like, well, how can the idea of a deity shine its light on one nation, one state, one city, one person? Come on. That's irrational.
So how did you feel as Bad Religion was developing as a band and the theme of Bad Religion as a concept, even as a band name, and then the theme of the lyrics started to come about with a lot of very intelligent lyrics, many of which surrounding religion and control and power. How did you feel as that developed?
Actually, I felt empowered because it's knowledge. And, you know, I'm a high school dropout. And most of my education was with Brett, Greg, and myself. Like, we all were just learning together. So, you know, I've always felt that the best thing that you can ever do for yourself is to stay educated. And, you know, I tell my kids, the day you stop learning or become unteachable is the day that it's kind of over for you. You have to remain always open. So, you know, being in the band, writing the things that we're writing have been fantastic because nothing has ever been browbeating. Nothing has ever been, you're wrong. It's always just been, well, let's question this. We've got 1,000 questions. We don't have any answers. Nobody knows.
How do the interactions work with religious people when you're on tour, whatever their role is in the shows?
Yeah, the strange thing is it's been so few and far between that I get the feeling that maybe they've read the lyrics, but we don't want to talk to them. It's, you know, it's possible that we could get into an argument with them and they'd win.
Has every member of the band been an atheist, humanist, naturalist of some sort?
I can't speak for everybody else. I know Brett, Greg, and myself have all kind of gotten to this point of saying, look, this is something worth questioning. You know, Greg's a scientist, so he's a straight up atheist. He says, you know, just show it to me. I need the proof. Greg, Brett in some of his writings has said, like, you know, you can see it in some of the songs that he's written. He says, like, I'd like it if you would show me that. It would kind of answer a bunch of questions, but so far, nothing. So, I think all of the guys have felt that we're not what a lot of people think we are, which is we're either on the super dark spectrum of devil worshippers, or we're just, you know, crazy atheists, or, you know, militant vegans, none of which we are.
I think some people fail to realize the impact that non-theists of various sorts have had on art and culture throughout history. Now, we'll never know for many of them. It's something that they were so repressed through most points in history, they couldn't be public. But through the last 30, 50 years, something has very much changed, and we've been able to be available, and a band like Band Religion is possible. If... As a tribute to some of your favorite musical artists that are non-theistic, if you had to form a super band with no one else from Bad Religion in it, no one from Bad Religion can be in it, but it's you and just dead or alive musical heroes that are non-religious, who would they be?
It's me and Tim Minchin. And I'm playing cello.
Keeping your mouth shut, huh?
Yeah, but I like that. I can do that all day long.
He's awesome, isn't he?
Yeah, he's awesome.
Yusom, what did you think of the performance?
I thought it was fantastic. I wish it was an hour longer. Guys like Fat Mike from NoFX. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he would be great in the Tim Minchin experience as well. So it's me, Fat Mike, and Tim Minchin.
Interesting. Two bass players and one band and a pianist.
But I'm playing cello. Fat Mike is actually...
Oh, that's right.
Tim Minchin is just doing... See, they're doing jokes back and forth. Now I can see it all happening. I'm going to make this band happen now.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. Cool. And then were you brought up very religious? Or?
No. Yeah. I was born in Kansas. I was, raised a Baptist. I went to church when I was a kid, but I just sat there and fell asleep and said, I was the kid in school, in Sunday school, that I was going, that doesn't make any sense.
So you're questioning.
I'd get in trouble. Because I'd say, like, wait, really? Really? All of the animals on one boat? Really? Like, that kind of stuff. And I'm, you know, like, with this one, like, okay, wait, so there's Adam and Eve and two guys. Where does everybody come from? And I got that. I'm like, wait, this isn't wrong. It's just, it's... They were trying to explain to me. I said, I'm done. And you can't.
So you didn't have that baggage to really leave. You weren't, like, afraid of the hell and all that stuff.
I think for me in my whole life, I've just wanted answers. And I mean, to everything. I just want answers. And you never get them. You just keep, you know, every answer makes another question. But, when you're young, it's frustrating and you become the Tasmanian devil and you hate everybody. And as you get older, you start to realize that's the fascinating journey. Asking a question, getting an answer that brings up three other questions are, like, awesome. So, life to me is just a series of temporary answers to questions that I had 5 minutes ago, but now I've got three more that are more pressing that I want answers to, and I'll find them tomorrow.
The biggest difference that I've seen with interviewing the fundamentalist Christians as opposed to the people here is that they feel they have the answers to everything, and people here seem to be willing to say, I don't know. And that seems to be the big difference that I have.
Well, maybe they're, maybe I have an empathetic idea that they have the answers because they're just afraid. And the answer makes sense to their fear. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid of dying. I'm not afraid of an afterlife. I'm not afraid of, am I going to go to hell because I didn't live some sort of correct life? I'm not afraid of any of that. And I, for me, I can look at that and say, that is a fucking brilliant way for a hierarchy to maintain control of its citizenry. Say, like, look, there's a God that's going to hurt you if you don't do the right things. That's amazing. We're in 2012. We're so far beyond the idea of being scared into submission by religion. If there is a God, he's smiling and not punishing. He's like, you guys are doing rad. Thumbs up.
Is the rest of your family, since you were in a Baptist, did you know a lot of other people that had doubts?
Well, they think I'm a terrorist. Yeah. And I'm not kidding. They think I'm a terrorist.
They're really upset about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm okay with that.
I guess you can't really stay in the closet when you're a member of a band called that.
No. And I, you know, I'm, it's okay.
Do you remember when you first told them that you didn't believe?
I'm going to assume that they probably knew far before I did. Since I was the kid in Sunday school that was constantly being sent out of the class, you go outside, you're disrupting with logic. So,
well, is it an issue with you with them, or do they bring it up? Or
no.
Do you have contact with them?
Yeah, I mean, sort of. I don't see much of anybody because I spend 8 months out of the year on a tour bus. So, you know, contact with people was sort of like, send your mail to the back. It's long enough in the game now, and we're all old enough now where it's sort of like, okay, well, this is great. Here's your cousin's son that wants to be on the guest list. Awesome, come on down. We're not going to change your mind, are we? No. No.
That is interesting, yeah. Because I had a similar thing when I grew up Catholic and felt very isolated. And I, in high school, decided that I didn't believe any of this anymore, and I knew nobody else who doubted it.
Yeah.
I was very isolated for a long time, so.
I think a lot of people just feel hurt that you're abandoning a family value. But, you know, much like, you know, not wanting to follow in your father's footsteps to work in the shoe store, maybe you just have your own ideas. And that's, you know, kind of full circle back to the band. A lot of what we talk about is, look, if you just think for yourself, you might come up with something different. And honestly, to me, it's just such a terrible waste of your life to spend miserable. Whether it's in a school you don't like, with a person you don't like, in a church you don't like, in a job you don't like, you're here now. You just, why suffer? Why be miserable? Ask some questions. You might find an answer that leads you to three more questions that makes you happy.
For me, it wasn't so much that I was abandoning a family thing. They really, really did bother me when I was going to hell. You know, and that just tore them up.
Well, maybe there's a little secret smile that we all get when people think that, like, okay, I'll show you.
Right. Well, I just feel bad. You don't want people, like your family, to. Of course, it's weird because now all of my brothers and sisters and my father are atheists as well. So it was kind of funny how they all caught up eventually.
Well, you know, I think that much like other organizations that we're talking about that do themselves a disservice by focusing on something that seems irrelevant to their cause, a lot of religions have done the same thing. They've done themselves a huge disservice by focusing on things that don't help their cause, that have nothing to do with anything other than some idea of a rallying point. And, you know, when I hear about, you know, political people being voted into office because there were 100,000 robocalls saying that homosexuals were going to teach your children in schools if you vote this senator into office, that's the kind of thing that pisses me off and says, okay, I take exception to that. I don't care about that.
Yeah.
You know, you go do the politics thing. They're the religion part of it. They'll figure that out at their own school.
Well, then they can't separate it. And that is the problem, is it's fine for people to believe whatever they want, but when they try to pass laws based on their
right,
book.
And it's only, and it's, it really is only getting worse. You know, there's, I don't care what the politicians here say, this country was founded on the idea of the separation of those two things. And so when you've got one party who's basically saying, well, I'm more religious than you are, oh no, I'm more God-fearing than all of you, and I'll show you how. It's like, okay, you all need to just go away, because you're not helping anybody. Now you're just feeding into this frenzy of everybody's going to end up hurt by this agenda. No one's going to end up the winner. People might smile and go, see, we won. But in the long run, you'll get nothing for it.
Right. And go ahead, you keep asking questions.
I'm good, man.
You're good, man?
I'm good.
Okay, cool.
That was Jay Bentley, the bass player for the band Bad Religion. And of course, you can learn more about Bad Religion. You can purchase their albums and get some tour dates at their website, badreligion.com.
I loved his selection for the band he would be in. if he could pick like the ultimate band without any members of Bad Religion, he wants to be in a band with Tim Minchin and Fat Mike from NoFX. What a that would be a crazy and hilarious combination.
It definitely would.
NoFX is one of my favorites of all time, and they've got really smart but hilarious lyrics, very funny stuff in their social commentary. And
that's, and of course we heard Tim Minchin a couple months ago on our podcast.
Yeah.
Also hilarious and just really super talented, super smart. That's cool.
Oh yeah.
Listeners, I'm just wondering if you guys know of any sort of female punk atheist humanist artists that we can add into this mix. So if you have one in mind, if you know a band, give us a call at 202-618-1371. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, the listener comment line information you can find on thehumanisthour.org, along with previous episodes and show notes. You can also like us on Facebook.
Definitely. We have the links to both of our RSS feed and also how to subscribe to us on iTunes. And every person that we had on our show this month and every other month, we've got links to their websites, and you can buy their albums. You can find their tour dates. You can find their book tour dates, whatever it is that we got. It's all on thehumanisthour.org.
Awesome. Well, thanks for another great show. I will be seeing you in New Orleans. I arrive on June 7th for the weekend convention.
Awesome, Todd. I can't wait to see you. And listeners, hopefully we'll see you, some of you there. And I can't wait to meet you, and maybe we can interview you.
Indeed. Come on over and say hi. It'd be fun.
Definitely. All right, folks. Have a good one.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.